Please be seated, won't you?
Good morning. Do you remember a movie called Grand Canyon? Anybody remember that? Just give me a little hand so I can know how much I need to explain. So, Grand Canyon came out quite a while ago, and it's a very much a Hollywood sort of feel-good movie. It's a movie about seven different stories of interactions between people and a winding of all kinds of societal issues. There's one particular scene that I remember when I saw the movie has always stayed with me. There's a man who is at a Lakers game. He's sitting on the front row, and he's there with his movie-making buddy. They have a conversation about their life and everything that's going on, and he heads home. And as he's driving home from the place where they were watching the game, he goes through a neighborhood. And in Hollywood, it was called Compton. Whether that was actually where they were in the filming of it doesn't matter, but it was Compton. And Compton's kind of a rough part of Los Angeles. It's just a little bit off from Inglewood. So he's going, and his Volvo breaks down. And his Volvo's there, and he goes, and he walks down to the gas station and calls a tow truck, and he's worried, nervous, because of the neighborhood he's in. And up to this point in the scene, there's been a car that's driven around three or four times that's filled with young men. And eventually, when he gets back to the car and he's waiting for the tow truck driver, the young men pull up, and they begin to have sort of conversation. They're sort of messing with him, sort of harassing him. You're not really sure what's going to happen. And then about that time, the character played by Danny Glover pulls up in his tow truck, backs up to the car, and hooks it up. And he sort of moves through these guys. And a little bit later in the conversation, Simon, the tow truck driver, and the man, once he's sort of freed from this particular situation, they have this conversation, and this is what Simon says. Man, the world isn't supposed to work like this. I mean, maybe you don't know this yet. I'm supposed to be able to do my job without having to ask you to do it. This dude over here, the one with the car, is supposed to be able to wait without you ripping him off. Everything's supposed to be different than it is. I think part of the point of the movie was to shine a light on some of the bigger challenges in society at the time. But think about that for a minute. Everything is supposed to be different than it is. Do you ever think that? Do you ever think that when you watch the news or when you read the newspaper or when you look at blogs on the internet? If you ever go to the comment sections of a blog, you certainly want to think that the world could be different than it is. But don't you often think that? There's a little statement that sometimes is used in academia, and it goes something like this. All things being equal, and then you make a statement. The idea with that is that somehow you can equate everything, so then you can make an argument about whatever is going to happen. And I think one of the biggest challenges in our life is that we're stuck in our own perceptions. Paul talks about this in the letter to the Corinthians as seeing through a mirror dimly. In other words, we're limited in what we can see. We're limited in our perceptions. We're limited in our approach to the truth. We can never really see the whole picture. And so what we often might see as truth, we think is the world is equal, is all things are being equal. In other words, everything is like the experience we have, when often it's not. I was thinking a lot about that, and I wanted to tell you a little story about something that happened when I was in seminary. As you know, Ferguson, Missouri has been on our minds this week, and whether you wanted it to be or not, it's been on our minds. I have lots of friends who are Episcopal clergy who've been there in some of the protests and working in the community to try to bring as much nonviolent presence as they can. My friend Mike Kinman is dean of the cathedral in St. Louis, and he's been right there doing this stuff, and we've had some conversations. And I kept thinking about something that happened in my first year of seminary. Let me just tell you a little bit about what happened. Johnny Cassell was a classmate 1 year ahead of me, and she was African-American. She had three sons that were part of our community. And we had Doc Don. Doc Don was a retired physician who was this really cool guy from somewhere out in Texas, out in South Texas. And he was just really interesting and full of wisdom and just a great guy. They lived in the North and South apartments. So you don't know the context. This is in Austin, Texas. The North and South apartments are four-story buildings. We used to call them the Sodom and Gomorrah of the seminary. I'll let you imply what that might have meant. It really wasn't that bad. But this is where you could live if you didn't want to live out in Austin. You could pay $200. You got a tiny little apartment, probably no bigger than that stage over there. And so John and her family lived in two of those apartments, and Doc Don lived on the other side. And for some reason, the boys hadn't ever met a lot of the community, but one of the boys went to the pool that was in between. And he was swimming and just sort of relaxing and was where he was supposed to be. And Don came down and thought he was doing something he wasn't supposed to, so he confronted him. So imagine for just a few minutes what might have happened. They don't realize they're part of the same community. They don't realize that they should know each other. And things begin to happen. Don sort of gets authoritative, like a doctor might, and Johnny's son begins to react. And pretty soon, they're shoving each other and things begin to happen. No one else really saw the altercation. No one really saw what happened. No one really witnessed that. But what would unfold in our seminary community, a community of about 120 people, over the next several months, it would deeply divide us. It would cause great division and difficulty because what we saw was perhaps an innocent move by one person and someone else being where they were supposed to be ended up turning into violence and ended up dividing our community along race lines, along philosophical lines, along all kinds of things. It was a terse time because people had different opinions and we loved everybody that was involved. And yet it began to divide the community that we had. This is a tight community, a Christian community, a community committed to the gospel, a community committed to study, committed to all kinds of things. And we really couldn't work our way through it. So the dean appointed a few people and said, help us figure this out. So they decided to bring somebody in to help us work through this. His name was C.T. Vivian. You probably don't know that name. I've yet to meet anybody that really knew it. But he was part of this Southern Leadership Conference that was sort of the backbone behind Martin Luther King. In other words, he was a contemporary of Martin Luther King. There was a group of people that worked with him, and he was one of the organizers. And he was invited to come in and to help our seminary. And so we devoted two full days of time. We canceled classes, and we were together in two rooms for an extended period of time. And so C.T. Vivian helped us see in the mirror a little more clearly to help us understand all the complexities of what happened within that Christian-loving community. He turned the tables, so to speak, and he put the whites in the community in a different position than we'd ever been in. And it'd be hard for me to really capture in a 12-minute sermon exactly everything that happened during that time. But it changed my perspectives. At that point, I thought of myself as a pretty progressive person, a person who was thoughtful. I'd been brought up in a family that had included lots of people in our ways. We were certainly not considering ourselves racist or anything like that. And we were someone who was really, you know, a family that really thought about others. And yet I began to see some things that I didn't really understand fully. And I can't say that I do now. But it opened my eyes. Through that work, our community came to new understandings about how we would treat each other and how we would work together, and reconciliation and forgiveness began to happen. Johnny's son and Doc Don eventually talked to each other and were able to come to some kind of community with each other. I couldn't help but think about that as I was watching some of the events unfold. I think that day, when everything happened in St. Louis, the police officer got up and went about his work like he normally would. He was out to do a work he was called to do, a vocation, and attempting to do what he was called and charged to do by those who were over him. I don't understand all the complexities, but I think the young man who was there was living in his life and doing the things that he was normally doing and going about what was going on. And then all the events happen, and it's hard to really tell what the truth is, isn't it? If you watch the media, you hear all kinds of things. If you're on Facebook, oh my, you can get all kinds of opinions and different directions and different things that were said, and it's hard to tell what was really said and what wasn't said. And then we had the riots and other things. To me, it's really not about just that one incident. It's about our society. And sometimes we don't want to see it, but the challenges that are there. One of the things that's most difficult for me is, did you know that the most segregated hour in our life in a week is on Sunday mornings? As Christian communities of different races usually tend to gather apart from one another and not together. As I was thinking about that, I was wondering, what does it mean for us here? What does it mean in our community? What does it mean in our church? My friend Andy Doyle gathered some things together, and I wanted to read this to you. Christian morality understands that all people are created in the image of God. We believe that we are to treat one another with dignity. Christians should never be comfortable with any kind of homicide. No matter what the statistics are, we have come to clarity for the reasons on them. The social determinants of violence are clear. They should make us very uncomfortable and aware that we have work to do. According to the World Health Organization, and listen carefully, risk factors that determine how violence might be impacted in a community, within close relationships, family, friends, intimate partners, and peers, are the following. Poor monitoring and supervision of children by parents. Harsh or lax inconsistent parental discipline. A low level of attachment between parents and children. Low involvement in children's activities. Parental or substance abuse or criminality. Low income and associating with delinquent peers. Risk factors for a greater community, not just within families, but within the community around them, are low levels of social cohesion within the community, gangs and local supply of guns and drugs, absence of nonviolent alternatives for resolving conflicts, high income inequality, rapid social and demographic changes, and urbanization. Andy goes on, the health and well-being of a society is always rooted deeply in how well families and individuals are able to thrive within a supportive community. The recent violence reveals not only racism and violence, but deep issues that prevent individuals and their families from thriving in the United States. We, the church, must face the fact that we're not well, and the divisions and violence we now suffer are deeply rooted and symptomatic. We have a problem. It's not something we want to talk about. It's not a mirror we want to look into. I thought a lot about this, and I keep thinking the whole purpose of a church is to be in the midst of a community. The whole purpose of a church is to hold up light and truth and to give encouragement to families and people as they struggle through the life that they're in. The whole purpose of a church is to call us to account for our sins and to do the work that we're supposed to do. We don't always think of it, but Sunday school is meant to encourage our children and to raise them up to be disciples, to see the world in a different way. Our youth group is meant to support teens through the difficult challenges of adolescence. Our weekly Bible studies and small groups are meant to cause social cohesion and to bring people together. Our praise on Sundays is meant to call us to a higher purpose. We have such a gift to offer the community. And so we can't hold back and be afraid, but we're called to move in. I'll be forever grateful for the work that C.T. Vivian did in the community that I was in and how it opened my eyes. It's changed the way I act in community. So think about the gospel for today. It's about God's judgment. Jesus is going to come back and we'll sing hymns, Lo, He Comes in Clouds Descending, and we hear this great sort of image and that earlier song, These Are the Days of Elijah. I think of that scene when in Lord of the Rings when they come over the, you know, coming through the sun and down the horses and all this kind of stuff. We have this image, and what do we think that this judgment is about? More often than not, I think we think judgment is about telling other people what they're not supposed to do, right? Because we're fine, but it's everybody else out there. God's judgment is about righteousness. God's judgment is about justice. It's about righting the things that are wrong. God's justice is about seeing the world as it can be and helping it to get there. And Jesus invites us to stay awake. To stay awake and to watch and to be part of God's kingdom. So let's make this a little more personal. We have children of all kinds of diversity within our congregation, and it's a blessing to us. But here's a hard reality. My son Asher, and let's say Micah Geary, or his friend Michael, who's African American at school, have very different paths ahead of them. Micah and Michael are 4 to 6 times more likely to have a violent interaction with the police simply because of the color of their skin. Micah and Michael are 21 times more likely to suffer gun violence in their life than Asher. Those statistics seem so far off and unbelievable, don't they? And yet that's the hard reality. So what work can we do? How can we think of our own children in our own parish? And how can we think of the work that we might do to make our part of the world more like it's supposed to be? I think one thing you could do this week is to find a person of color in your life and ask them about Ferguson. And listen. Don't comment, don't justify, don't judge. Listen. Listen to their perspective. I think another thing you can do is find a police officer in your life and ask them about it. How many of you know police officers? I know lots of them. Most of them are fine, outstanding, wonderful people who have committed themselves to put themselves on the line in the community. But talk to them as well. And then take some time to reflect on how you interact or react to people of color in your life. What does that mean for you? I'd like to say that I've got it all worked out, but I don't. I still guard my wallet sometimes. I sometimes move to the side of the other way. If I'm in certain neighborhoods, I'm a little more watchful than I used to be. It's hard work to do, but sometimes we're called to do that work. And then I might ask you to think about being a stronger Christian wherever you might be. And a stronger Christian is awake. And a stronger Christian is cleaning that mirror to see more truth than they've ever been able to see before. And to me, if we begin to do that work, the world about us changes. You deepen community by listening. You deepen community by self-examination. And you deepen the work of justice by being aware of yourself and by working for active change wherever you might be. I wish the world was more like it was supposed to be, but it isn't. And so we're called as a church to make a difference in the world. And we're doing that every day in all kinds of people's lives. Our work in the food pantry over at St. Paul's and the breakfast is helping people and is serving those in that community. Our work through IHN, Interfaith Hospitality Network, is enacting justice for those who might be almost homeless. Our work with Tom's Helpers is giving people dignity that might not find it in the workplace. And I can think of so many other ministries that are happening within our congregation where we can make a difference and we can be God's justice enacted in the world. So let's not shy away from the hard questions. Let's not shy away from hard statistics. Let's not shy away from the work that we're called to do. But let's stay awake. Let's stay awake. Amen.